Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamon, and you're very welcome to this, a podcast all about the Irish League. This time round, we're looking ahead to the future, 5 years from now, in fact, as NIFL have just recently published their strategic guide on what they hope to achieve by the year 2028. They call it a bold and brighter future, with a change of season schedule right atop of its agenda. Are we closer than ever before to some form of summer football? We've skimmed through the dock and we're here to give you our thoughts on top of our usual review and preview of all the latest games on this week's edition of Kicking Match. Yes, you are correct. Football league structures and four-point plans of growth, they are shooting right to the top of the running order this week, but this document has really ignited a lot of discussion around some hot button topics around the league, and the fallout from these plans will have huge impact on what we will see on the pitch in years to come. But luckily for you, you won't have to wait 6 months to get into the meat and potato of it, as we're going to cover it right here, right now. And joining me with his knife and fork poised over all of the good stuff is football writer with Belfast Live. Hello and welcome back, Stephen Crawford. How do I find you?
Fine, very good, Peter. How are you?
I'm good. I'm delighted to hear that. I'm sure in your world, obviously the games are your bread and butter. That's what you're sinking your teeth into. But to go straight to our lead story, when something as big and juicy, quite like this big NIFL strategy guide, drops on your lap, you must think, well, there's my interviews and headlines sorted for the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's a wee bit of a whisper a couple of weeks ago that, you know, this was obviously in the pipeline. And obviously the headline is the summer football, as it has been for the last probably 12 to 24 months. You know, it's been the attention grabber. But I think it would be unfair just to focus on that. I think there's a lot of positive things come out of this strategic plan. And it's no surprise there's a very ambitious board there, obviously led by Gerard. And they really want to drive the league forward. And I think just to focus on summer football, they'll not be wrong. But obviously, that's the one that grabs all the headlines.
They do make a rod for their own back here because it has so much breadth. It does set them up now in a couple of years. People will come back to this document. I've listened to a lot of interviews with Gerard Lawler, the CEO, when he talks about how they really wanted to put information down, but be detail sparse. And what they have done is they've said that they're not going to rest on their laurels and they are keen to keep this progression. And I look at this as very much the first big post-COVID statement of intent. We're over it, we're out of it, we can put that to bed of what we had to deal with, and now it's about what we're doing looking forward. There's some key things, as you said, that the headlines are, and that is around the summer schedule. But the one thing that also stood out to me is the R word, and that's revenue. That's something that he kept hammering home. I think now this proves more than ever before that if you want to be an Irish League club, particularly at the top end, in the top flight, you've now got to think beyond just what you used to before, and it's about trying to really grow financially, not just be successful on the pitch, but grow beyond that.
Yeah, I'd agree with you 100%. And like, it's no surprise that clubs are looking for inward investment, you know, and we've seen it already this season with Carrick Rangers and Corian inviting that in. So I think gone are the days when a football club was just a Saturday business. It has to look now, it has to be 7 days a week. You have to get people in, you have to do things outside of football, you have to attract people into the club. And I think that's where clubs are going down this route. And I think that's been key, even with, you look at someone like Linfield last year with their appointment of David Graham. And I think, you know, whenever one of the first things he said was about bringing investment into Linfield, who are arguably the biggest club, not just in Northern Ireland, but in Ireland as a whole. And they're looking at revenue streams and how do you enhance that further. So I think every club has to take that on board. How do we make ourselves sustainable and how do we grow?
Another word which comes out of this is the idea that the Irish League is a product. It's there to be sold, and with that comes advertising, promotion. And one of the things that was interesting to me when I saw it is what they describe as their engagement pillar, that they want to increase total attendances by 40%. They want to get broadcast audiences to 3.5 million per year. It's hard to picture it for me what that actually will look like. But I think it's saying, look, it's time to start growing these attendances. And they feel very much like NIFL is going to play a role in trying to increase attendances and encourage people to cross that line and go to grounds, maybe for the first time.
I think that the marketing is very key, and I think you see that over the last couple of seasons with the promotion NIFL has done and bringing on the likes of David Kerr there, and some of his stuff has been fantastic in terms of video and social media. And I think those are the areas that they want to try and drive engagement. And it's maybe a younger market, a market that's maybe not going to Irish League games. And we have seen in the last couple of seasons like the rise in attendance, which is great, but it's very key that obviously NIFL wants to keep growing that, and they see that there is room to grow that.
Of course, there's only so much that NIFL can do. They are not the footballing gods in this country. They are merely the organisation, the collective that has the interest on behalf of the collective of NIFL clubs. And I'm sure that there'll be fans out there saying, what about the grounds? What about investment in stadia? And this is, they can't really magic this money out of nowhere. They're trying to encourage investment, and they will obviously be there lobbying politicians to try and get this money across the line. But when you look at all this about revenue drawing audiences and stuff like that, I do think that Stadia is currently the elephant in the room. And until that is fixed, is probably a strong word there, but until there is some attention and some investment there, the growth of the league will ultimately be stunted.
100%, and we can't hide it. There are a few grounds in the Irish League which desperately need attention, and unfortunately, clubs don't have that revenue there to be able to go and do it themselves. And I think it is a disgrace that clubs have been waiting for so long on this money. You know, it's over a decade now, and it just needs sorted. And it's unfair in clubs that are doing everything else to try and help grow their product and help grow their club, and they've been held back by something like this here.
One thing he said, and this is where we will have, there's disagreements, there's arguments. Clearly, all these things are debate into how the league moves forward. But one thing I've heard Gerard Lawler say for probably close to a year is that they are moving forward, and some clubs will have to decide, are they getting on the train or are they going to let it leave the station? And what he's really alluding to there is, are some clubs in the championship, maybe just below, are they ready to grow? Are they ready to try and put things forward to invest in grounds? The big example, I don't want to single them out too much, but you look at a club like Knockbreda, who's in the championship, that doesn't have floodlights. They aren't saying it outright, but I think with the league looking to become more professional, not professional fully when it comes to all the playing staff and the people behind the scenes, but trying to become a more professional league and outfit, and this goes from the top all the way through the leagues that NIFL have a hand in. I think he's saying clubs, you may be limited unless you start trying to get to a certain standard. We've seen this before when it came to when the league moved to 12 team and you had to get a certain license. I think we may be seeing a return to that, and particularly at the lower end of NIFL, some questions will be asked of, are you ready to commit to all these hoops that we're going to ask you to jump through? And if you're not, they believe other clubs will be willing to do that.
Yeah, like I think we've seen it in the past where clubs have been pushing at the top of the championship and even the PIL, and they were in a position to get promoted, but they couldn't get promoted because they didn't meet certain standards. And I think that's a terrible way for a club to be, is that, you know, you're getting success on the pitch, but you've been held back in other areas. Now, obviously, that comes down to finances as well. It's not just a simple click your fingers. But I think Loch Goller, a fantastic example. Like, obviously, their stadium was deemed not ready for Premiership football during the summer. That club worked their socks off to make sure that the first game of the season at home against Corrien on the Friday, I think it's the 11th of August, was 100% ready. And I think it's a credit to them because Loch Goller aren't exactly coming down with multi-millionaires at the club, but they worked and they got it done because they had that desire to be there and be successful in the Premier League.
Let's get to it then. The one thing that did grab the headlines, there is clearly an intention from NIFL, and they're listening to their clubs, and we've seen it. It's been written about for years now. They are clearly going to do a review. They're going to have a conversation, and they're going to have a look at the playing calendar. What way it's going to look, how it's going to work out, we don't know. But this document says that it's a 5-year plan. It might be 2 years. It could take to the whole 5 years. But clearly all these discussions and all these conversations have come down to this. We're about to have this debate. We're about to have this discussion. And right now, I'm not quite sure how it's all going to play out. I know they talk about that they're going to have the conversation with clubs. But to go back to that train metaphor, it feels like it is. The train's already moving in that direction, perhaps. And some may disagree and some may not like it. And we've already heard that some people near the top end of this league do not like it. But is the word inevitable over the top?
I think it certainly feels that it's pushing that way, and it has been feeling that that's been going that way for a number of years. Now, obviously, it's how it's reported and how certain fans especially maybe see the situation. They feel that it's maybe been voiced it upon clubs, but I don't think it will be. I think clubs will have their say. I think officials will have their say. And, you know, a decision will have to be made off that. I think I spoke to Stephen Baxter after the match on Saturday, and he was very forthright in saying that he doesn't want it. His players don't want it. He feels that it'll be to the advantage of a minority, and the rest of the teams will suffer because we aren't a full-time setup. We've only got a few, but at the minute we've only probably 3 full-time clubs. He feels it's unfair to ask players to forgo their holidays in the summer. That's just one aspect of it. He was saying about European, you know, it says, you know, obviously a lot's been made of trying to help clubs progress in Europe. He feels that the only way you're going to progress in Europe is by the luck of the draw, really, is who you pick up in that first round. You know, as we saw with Linfield a couple of years ago, they've come the closest out in an Irish League club, and they won that first round tie, and that's what you have to do. Larne were unfortunate this year. They had a tough draw, but maybe next year whoever wins the league will get a slightly easier draw and put them in the box seat. But there's a lot of things to be answered. At the minute, I'm sort of on the fence. I don't know. Part of me thinks it would be good to see a bit of a change and see things, but then I worry about clubs lower down the ladder. How's it going to affect them? You know, the last thing we want is see clubs disadvantaged because of a move that's going to advantage clubs at the top end of the tree. I think it has to benefit the majority and not the minority.
The big question I have, and I'm delighted to say here that I'm going to have the chance to ask Jared Lawler this very question on an upcoming special for the podcast. I've asked and I'm going to have a chat with him. And one of the big questions I'm going to have is, if we're going to move to having the discussion officially on a change to the league schedule, how does this look and how is it going to be decided? Is it going to be just the top 12 teams? And even if it is the top 12 teams, and I doubt that it is, are we just going to have one big vote in 18 months' time and everybody's vote counts as one? And does it need to be a supermajority? Does it just need to be 50% plus one? How do we decide this?
Yeah, I think that's going to be key. And I think that information coming out to the punters that go through the gates is going to be key, because at the minute there is a lot of what about this and what about that, and people are a bit worried about how it's all going to be done. But I think you're right. You know, who gets a vote? How far does it go down the chain? And who ultimately has the deciding vote? And once something's been decided, is that it? It's a bit like the Sunday football vote. When is that going to raise its head again? Like, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of things that have to be answered, I think.
And there's plenty of people who are staunch, not keen on changing the schedule, thinks that it works. Not saying Stephen Baxter is staunch, but he's made his view clear. I'm sure for them, they would almost be happy to have this conversation, because it feels like we're moving towards our referendum moment. And whatever side you're on, you've got to believe of once that vote is decided, clearly you're going to have to move on with it. And that's the way it's going to go. So if it is that there is not a majority, or the decision is not made that they're going to pursue a different schedule, you've got to believe that then we're going to leave this now, conversation's over. Or because the people that win think this cannot be constant 2 years until we get our change. What I'm sure the other changes people will be looking for is, could we see a change from the 3 o'clock on the Saturdays? Like, it's not specifically said in this document about changing the what you'd probably describe as the traditional kickoff time. But if we are continuing on changes since the post-COVID seasons, Friday nights are doing very well for some clubs. There's no doubting that this is Lauren's preferred time to play games, and that is a team that has saw a lot of growth in their attendance. There's a variety of reasons for that. Success is one of them, but they've been able to get more fans through the turnstiles. Maybe it feels further away, but could you see a scenario where actually the Irish League moves closer to a league that they're always associated with in the League of Ireland, where 3 o'clock on Saturday becomes 7:45 on a Friday?
Well, it's very interesting you bring this up here because it could be something that's taken out of the Irish League's hands very soon. Because I've been reading recently that the Premier League are pushing to get rid of the 3 p.m. blackout for broadcasting games. And if that happens, it's going to have a major impact on all other games. Now, obviously, we've had that for years and it's sort of helped like, people go out to games. But if they start broadcasting Premier League games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, clubs are going to have to look and say, well, we're competing against Man United, Liverpool, whoever. So I think you will see clubs, and that's probably a reason why a summer switch might benefit teams more because you're not competing against the Premier League. So all those things there have to be taken into account and see how it all develops because you're not, I think it was what Jared was saying about competing against the GAA in the summer. You don't want to be coming up against too many big sports. It gives people a lot of options about where else to spend their money, like, you know.
I think if that was to go through and the broadcasting blackout on Premier League games was taken away, I think that would be the kill shot. That would pretty much take out 3 o'clock on a Saturday for Irish League, because there's no doubting that that is the Irish League's biggest competitor. And the idea that Man United and Arsenal on the TV are competing against any of these clubs, it would dwarf it. We see in American sports, which I'm a keen observer on, that there's big windows that they have, but oftentimes sports try and stay out of each other's way to the best of their abilities. And that you're absolutely right. That could be one of the biggest developments for sports broadcasting this country has seen in close to 20 years, maybe since Sky Sports came on and changed the game there. Another thing he said was the idea of looking at the whole framework of the leagues together. How many leagues do they have? Do they have more? Do they have less? They have three of them at the minute. They talk about this idea of what the pyramid of football here is. And I want to highlight that point ever so slightly, because it feels to me a very much a reaction to the situation we saw with the PIL, where Pace and I were set to be relegated for various reasons. They were not seemingly finding a home amongst the various leagues below the PIL, which are these different chiefdoms that are run their own leagues. And that clearly created some sort of friction where how is NIFL supposed to take on ambitious clubs from Mid-Ulster, etc., the Ballymena League, if you aren't willing to take our clubs to go down? And it will be interesting from a bit of a nerd out football pyramid view of how that changes. Will the pathways be clearer? Or could we see NIFL become somewhat of a closed shop for clubs?
Well, I would hope it wouldn't be a closed shop because I think clubs should always have that ambition to want to better themselves and try and climb the leagues as much as possible. Like, you know, whenever you look in England and you have the non-league teams trying to break into the Football League and then you even get on in the higher, like in the Premier League's obviously the ultimate dream. But I think that's confusion over the summer and there was about who was going to come in and where could the PSNA go and this, that, and the other. Everything needs to be aligned and maybe be more inviting to clubs to feel that there is a direct pathway to move up the leagues because there are some big clubs down there, some ambitious clubs that are, you know, probably have a lot of good players about them and, you know, maybe a bit of backing financially. And we'd like to see them progress. We want to see every club trying to be the best version of themselves. And I think moving into the PIL Championship and maybe even the Premiership is where ultimately you want to give clubs a pathway to try and achieve.
Some will forget that who were Warren Point 15 years ago, realistically. And we now see the likes of Ballymacash jump in, move up, and you want to have that door open. You just do not know who the next club, who's the next banger. Banger has history, they have a heritage. But what's stopping, and I'm kind of looking at that cluster of teams from West Belfast, who could potentially progress from there? It's we can just see new teams come out of nowhere, or these seems over the top to say sleeping giants, but Arath Ryland step up after all those years. You would hate to see the door close there, because who would have also put on, look, they have the investment, but Larne being a bit more of a hotspot for football. So we need, that's the great thing about football across the board, is that it feels like a complete democracy, and the less that you can stop teams, and the easier that you can make, if you keep winning your games, you can eventually play a Real Madrid in the Champions League final, the better. To come back to the calendar, just to have this final discussion on it. When people are thinking, well, what would this move be? From talking to some people not connected to NIFL, just generally amongst people like yourself, there seems to be two schools of thought of what it could move to. One of them is what you'd probably call classic summer football, which would be somewhere between February to November. We all know what the big disagreements there would be. It's Boxing Day, you would completely lose it. The other version of that, where you try and keep in Boxing Day, would be the league would start somewhere around May, potentially, and then it would end in February. From talking to some people, they feel as though if you're going to do this, you just have to rip the bandage off and just lose Boxing Day. When there's so many big players like Crusaders who are, let's say, skeptical of a change of schedule, that feels like a big jump to go. Not only are we moving the schedule, but you're losing Boxing Day as well. That's a big leap.
It is, and I think that's what could end up going against them if they were go down that route of say February to November. I think realistically, May to February is probably what they'll pitch at teams, because you've still confidence in the Boxing Day fixtures. You've got New Year's Day in, although it's not as big in the calendar, but it's still the holiday period. Although it would be very strange going to an Irish Cup final in February, I have to say. But these are.
Well, we could be sitting here in that situation where the final day of the season's rained off, or it's frozen off. Is removing these weather-related dramas not a part of the move here?
This is it. And I suppose when you look at our summer this year, you could have had quite a few games cancelled over the summer with the way the rain is. This is the thing about Northern Ireland, it's the joys, is that you can't guarantee the weather, So, look, it's going to be a massive decision for everybody involved in the Irish League. And it's going to be a monumental decision, because one way or the other, as we were saying there, it could put the whole thing to bed. We all want to see the league progress. As I said earlier, we want to see every club try and progress with
Before we get into the games that happened over the weekend, finally this podcast is able to react to breaking news as it happens. Stephen, Glenavon finally have a brand new boss. We spent pretty much a majority of last week's podcast reflecting on the life and times and career of Gary Hamilton in Lurgan. You can go listen back to that. And in that podcast, I was talking through a whole list of names of people that could become Glenavon boss. One of them that wasn't on this list, and I feel very silly because I know he had been rumoured. He's got the job. Stephen McDonnell is going to be in the dugout for Glenavon's game against Larne. Tell me, were you surprised?
Yeah, I suppose it was maybe a bit of a left field name, but he's a guy that's been about Northern Irish football for a while. Obviously, he managed Warren Point, was about what, 4 or 5 years ago now. But he's always sort of kept his hand on the job at the IFA as well. He was a very well-respected coach. He's a guy with a lot of contacts. He's worked at Dundalk and Shelbourne. So his time at Warren Point came to an end in a bad way, because when he first took over in a short-term deal, he'd obviously saved them from relegation. They got them to the Irish Cup semi-final. Second season, it didn't work out as well. I think he lost 12 of his first 15 games, and they had quite a few heavy defeats along the way. But he's a guy that tries to play football probably the right way. Whether or not coming back into this season maybe will change his philosophy slightly, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he sets his team up. But he's definitely a very progressive coach. So he's a young man with big ideas, and you wish him well because Dunavon's at a bit of a low ebb at the minute. You know, since Gary left, it's you just feel that it's a club that really needs that figurehead in there to try and bring them forward. They have a lot of good players still there, so they need a big shot in the arm. It's going to be a baptism of fire for them this Saturday evening, coming up against the league champions, who look as if they're just steamrolling everybody at the minute. But it's a free hit for him. He can go out there and, like, I'm sure he'll have a couple of training sessions under his belt this week, and he'll have the lads fired. But I suppose losing your one of your best players and your number one goalkeeper just makes life just that wee bit more difficult. But this is what the joys of football management. You just have to deal with what's in front of you.
A young man indeed, 31 he is when he comes into that role. He'll be...
Makes me feel old.
Look, he'll be looking at the likes of Sean Ward going, this is where we have to work out this. But like you said, he was sitting there, I think 27 when he became boss of Warren Point. And one of the things that I've been reading in the Glenavon statement, that they talk about how they see him as someone that has in-depth knowledge of football at senior and junior levels, both sides of the border. And that's quite important for them, because the issue that Glenavon have been having is recruitment. They haven't had the money, or at least they haven't been forthright with money to pay the transfer fees, which the chairman's talked about being quite inflated, even on a wage front. So they wanted someone who knew football at various levels, both in Northern Ireland and in the sections of League of Ireland. So they'll lean into that, and he comes in as someone who they'll hope and believe is able to bring a different strategy, a different outlook, and be progressive with his football. We've seen people try to play nice football at the bottom of the league, and it hasn't worked out. And if the table wasn't clear enough, that is where Glenavon are residing. His first task and his number one task, I doubt, will be trying to get seventh. I think it's safety this year for Glenavon. And this isn't his squad. He didn't assemble these players. That can be difficult when you're putting that
100%
position.
The pressure's on straight away. And the problem will be his expectation levels, because the fans there, a majority of them will still be expecting Glenavon to be challenging for that European playoff place. But you just have to accept where you're at the minute. And I think that's probably what he did when he first came into the Warren Point Town job. He knew they were in difficulty, and he managed to steer them clear of that. So you mentioned there about, you know, his knowledge of players north and south of the border. And I think come January that you will see probably a lot of players coming into the club from north and south. Glenavon have used that market very well and over recent seasons. And I think he will look probably maybe a few young players, loan players. He'll try to do everything to try and galvanize the squad. Another I thought an our part was key in the statement was they labelled him a tracksuit manager, and to me that...
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so to me that seems obviously his coaching ability and what they see as him, you know, what he's able to do on the training ground in terms to drive the club forward. And whoever's going to come in after Gary is always going to have a massive job, you know, so you need someone that's going to come in there, knows what they're talking about, and has the ability in himself to... and the faith in himself to be able to drive the club forward.
I feel like this is like the longest yard he's come in to try and work with all these people, and he's going to try and make these pieces work. But of course, there is some real nice pieces in this Glenavon side. Yes, they've lost Fitzpatrick, but they still have Jim McDonough on loan. They haven't got this brilliant strike force, but at the back, they've got experience and Wallace, and they have a goalkeeper who is always being raved about, and Brown... not for this week, as he got a red card, we'll get to. If you're coming in, you always want to get results and you always want to get points. But I wonder, because, well, and we talk about on this podcast about it, till the cows come home, about how the bottom six games are big pressure games. Perhaps, does it give him a couple of free hits that his opening games are going to be Larne, Corrine away, Cliftonville home, and then Glentoran away? There's like a Derview Cup game in the middle of there, but like the cup can wait for now. Does that, I guess you just gotta go with the hand that you're dealt. Perhaps they're like free hits and the pressure's off. You're not expected to get points there.
It probably to a certain degree, and it probably will give them a wee bit of time to look at a squad, because realistically you're going into those games, as you admit, you know, that you are going to back against the wall. You're playing the top six teams, you're not in great form. I was at their game on Saturday, and you could see they were being a bit pragmatic in how they went about things, trying to be hard to beat. And I would say he's not going to come in and try to play too much expansive football early on. You know, you probably just think, look, small margins at the start, try and keep a clean sheet, pick a point up here, see how you go. If they can pick up anything out of those four games, the morale boost they'll get and get out of that going into the games against the teams around them, and they'll be able to say to themselves, well, if we can take points at, say, Glentoran and Corrie or wherever, why can't we go to Carrick, or why can't we go to Ballymena or Dungannon Swifts and pick up points? You know what I mean? So I think it's just about changing the attitude, the morale at the wee minute, because they are rock bottom at the minute, and just trying to slowly but surely start to put some points on the board.
The one thing that I've seen from teams who've struggled in this league over the past few years is how they react to these different situations that they're put in, from the must wins to the free hits to the please don't get thumped games. And oftentimes I see some teams go into these big games where they play with this kind of reckless abandon and it looks good for 10 minutes, and then they sometimes get thumped, and then sometimes they box shy and they still get blown away, or it's a decent performance, it's quite dull, but at least it was only 3-0 away from home and there's two goals in the last 5 minutes. The thing which they'll not want to get caught up in is that second one too much, because you go into these games against Corrie and Cliftonville and Glentoran, and you can somewhat get kind of tight and caught up with trying to dive and duck when these big punches come your way. And it's sometimes hard for teams to get out of that shell and out of that rhythm when they play other teams, because they're so scared of that big right hook where they're almost letting their other teams in the bottom six come onto them, because they're just not used to being able to come out and play. So that's where his job will become difficult, is can he deal with the big games but also give them that freedom which they will need when they play against these teams like the Carricks and the Dungannons, where they'll need to get a majority of their points. Saying that, they go to Seaview and they come out with 0 points, 0 goals, and now they're down their goalkeeper due to a red card. Did they give it a go, or did they try to play damage limitations?
It was a funny game because the crew's just still a wee bit of a hangover from their North Belfast Derby defeat, and there was just really no atmosphere at the ground, so it was eerily quiet for large parts. You know, I felt a bit like a pre-season game at part, and I think I probably suited Glenavon because they were just able to say, right, we've got a game plan here, let's make things difficult for the crews. But the killer blow was just a scrappy goal they could see that 2 minutes, you know, before half time. I think if they could have got into half time 0-0, get themselves reinvigorated, get a bit more messages on board, but you could see that just sort of deflated them a bit, and then they can see that another really stinking goal just after the restart, and it really was a non-contest after that. And the sending off for Rory just made it a really, really bad day, because it's one of those ones that was just reacting. You know, the keeper comes out, puts his hands up, not much you can do about it, but it's the last thing they needed really at that stage, was, you know, they lose your goalkeeper, the points were lost, and they lose any player like that was a double whammy, like, you know.
Crusaders very much did have, we can look at it now, and perhaps they're not out of it completely, but they've been in a funk, and a big part of that was that drubbing, perhaps, against Cliftonville, where Cliftonville went to Seaview, and they just ran amok. What a performance from them. Crusaders have to shake that off. It feels like they are also shaking that off ever so slightly. Perhaps not a vintage performance from them, but after the last time they were there in that ground before the Cliftonville beating was losing 2 points against Loughall, perhaps that's going to be a nice little confidence booster for them. Stephen Baxter's got a lot of work to do with that squad to get them back up to where they were in early August.
Yeah, I think there's a combination of factors. They may be feeling a wee bit of tiredness, and they have a few injuries at the minute. Obviously, Timmy Collicker's a massive blow to them at the back, and with Josh Robinson, who they're trying to be ready for first team action, and then he goes and gets sent off in a reserve team game last Monday night, which I don't think the manager was best pleased about. So I think he'll be getting near first team action shortly. Rory McKeown's got nursing a knee injury, which they're trying to manage, and Ben Kennedy's a few wee aches and pains. So they're just probably reached this stage of the season where they just need to clear up the injury list and get themselves firing again. But look, they've had a fantastic start to the season, but Cliftonville did a job on them last week. I was very, very impressed with Cliftonville. They went at them with pace and they punished their mistakes, So, but that's what you're going to get throughout the season. You're going to get teams that are, hitting form, teams that are losing form. And when you look at the top six, I think there's only 5 points separating the top six at the minute. So that shows you just how tight it's going to be.
Well, a team who are definitely on form is Cliftonville, who were able to get another 3 points in less than a week when they went up to a place that's given out these 3 points like candy. Ballymena United are the latest victims to the sharpshooter that is Ben Wilson. What a player he is. I loved his goal against Crusaders. There's just something about it, picking up the ball and just shimmying on it. We spin and slotting it home. Another goal for him in a game where Cliftonville probably gave Ballymena a lot more space to try and play the ball than other teams have, but they never looked like they were really troubling the Reds at all. And typical Cliftonville, they score the goals and are looking quite ruthless, particularly when they progress midfield. They always have plenty of willing runners, and they've got a few fellas who are happy to pick up that ball in the box and send it home in the goal.
I know, like when you heard that Ronan Hale was going to be out long term and Joe Gormley's strong injury, probably a few Cliftonville fans have been worrying where the goals were going to come from, but they shouldn't have feared very much. And Ben Wilson, they've picked up a real player and a guy that has a real eye for goal. And you know, chatting to him after the match last Monday night, and it was interesting to hear his comments about Evan Ferguson and how he's a good friend of his, and how that they have their paths are sort of going in different directions at the present. Obviously, Evan's been touted as a future top four player in the Premier League, and Ben's back in our league. But he's a young lad who doesn't, it's not phasing him. He wants to make a career for himself. He's been over across the water, hasn't worked out for him, but he's determined to come to Irish League and make a success for himself. And I think that's 8 goals already for the season. So credit to him. I mean, as you said, the goal against Crusaders last Monday night, just total technique, great touch, great spin, and he puts it well past Johnny Tuffey. He's a player and definitely one to look out for this season.
What's really funny about the Ronan Hale absence from the team, because I did think, wow, he contributed so many goals and felt like one of the true operators of that team as an attacking force, is that it's given him a bit more shine, but perhaps him not being in the team has given the space and the ability to give Rory the chance to make that team his own. He is the figurehead of everything in that team. He's slotting those passes through. Looks like someone that never stops running and fighting. And another person that probably doesn't get a lot of credit. And when you score a goal, there's going to be a lot more eyes on you. But Chris Gallagher is having some season this year and is doing bits all over the pitch. I thought that was a bit of a weakness of their team, but Gallagher has stepped up massively this year. He's getting goals, he's stopping players, and looks to be one of the first names on the team sheet recently.
Yeah, I think both Chris and Rory had a very, very impressive game against Crusaders last week. They were just on that front foot the whole time and scored 2 great goals, the two of them. I think the midfield three with Ronan Dougherty included in that, Ronan sort of gets the ball and allows these guys to be able to go and press and put their opposition under pressure. And the three of them have undoubted quality when they're on the ball, and there's a big, big asset for them this year. And Jim has got them firing really well after what could be said as maybe a difficult start to life at Solitude for Jim. I think he's starting to win a few people around.
It feels like they've got a lot of freedom, and that is great. When all these results are coming, perhaps when they're not, you're thinking, oh, we need a bit of discipline, we need to be a bit more structured, but they'll take these wins as they come. For Ballymena, they wish they could buy a win. Yes, they had that victory against Carrickfergus a couple of weeks ago, but outside of that, it's been a straight up egg in every other game. I did say at the start of the season that I was worried about them, and it feels like a lot of other people are starting to come round to that thinking. They will be battling relegation all season for that. Looks like pretty much a certainty right now. Games against Cliftonville is not where they're expected to get their results, but as you look forward, they've got Dungannon coming up next, Newry on the horizon, and Dungannon coming up later on in October. They have had a couple of players come in. They've got a brand new manager, but they need to start getting points in these games against the bottom six, or they could be left adrift by Christmas.
Yeah, it's starting to mind up a wee bit, and I feel sorry for Jim because he's such a great guy, and he started off his managerial career, and he deserves the, well, I know people say you don't deserve anything, you have to earn it, like, you know, but Jim's one of these guys who's been there and done it as a player, and I would love to see him go on have a good managerial career, but he always felt that that was going to be a difficult task going into a Ballymena side, which had lost so many players in the summer. There was maybe a bit of a cloud hanging over them in terms of, you know, DJ leaving after so many years, and how do you pick yourselves up? The recruitment, Jim's probably working on a limited budget and trying to bring in the best players he can with the finances available. But you look at the clubs around him, Carrick Rangers recruitment this summer has been great again. Dungannon have done some great business. Loughgall have been the surprise pack of the season already. They've got a real spirit about them. They've got picked up some brilliant results, and they just seem to be playing with a real vigor and you know, enthusiasm about their play. So you look at Newry, Glenavon and Ballymena, those are the teams that just need to start finding that wee bit of form. But I think you look at the two big guns, Glenavon and Ballymena, and think, how are they going to turn their season around? Steve McDonald's obviously come in now, the Glenavon, can he work his magic there? But can Jim Irvine start piecing together a few results for Ballymena? Because as you rightly say, you don't want to be getting into Christmas with only 3 points on the board, because it's only going to end in one way.
They're not too far off. They only have 3 points, but they've got four teams ahead of them with just four more points there. A team who returned to the top six, it's not like they were out of it for a long while, was Coleraine. They defeat Glentoran at the Oval on Friday night. You were there. I was tweeting away along to it on Friday and got plenty of reaction to what my thoughts were. I'm going to allude more to them in just a bit, but first, Stephen, that's a huge victory for Coleraine, isn't it?
It's massive, and like obviously they came through a sticky patch, like the last league one before the game against Newry City last week was on the 11th of August, which is mad to think. And obviously the game against Dungannon where they threw away two late goals should have been our 3 points, and then they just went in a wee bit of a lull. But I just thought on Friday night there was a manner about the performance. They just wanted to earn, were very very confident about what about their football. They had no fears really of going to face the league leaders in their backyard, own backyard, and they took the game to Glentoran. I know you may be requesting some of the passing movements, but I think it bore dividends in the end. I think the quality on the ball, I think whenever you have Andy Scott, Conor McKendry, Jamie Gallagher all driving forward and creating chances, they were perhaps unfortunately fall behind in the first half, but I think the second half they dominated, and I don't think anybody could really begrudge him the 3 points. I thought they fully deserved to take the one in the end.
Absolutely, they were well worth their victory, and they saw weakness in Glentoran and they put their boot on and they did not let go. It took a while for them to get the goals, and it was a quick fire double around the 80-minute mark where they got their victory. Matthew Shevlin popping up again, a lovely bit of magic from McKendry, feels like a bit of a solo goal, picking up outside the box on the wing, coming in, and it's typical McKendry on his left foot. He has got whip and he has got magic in that boot. And yes, 15 minutes into the game, I thought there was a lot of passing. There was a lot of passing back to the centre backs, which of course is quite an in vogue thing in the Premier League. And I merely remarked that I'm like, either this is absolutely brilliant and it's going to do well, or this looks like it's not going to go well and they're going to get caught out. And they do go a goal down, and Coleraine have played a lot of flashy football this season so far and aren't higher in the table. They're not as high as they would like to be. It was a brilliant performance. It felt like their most complete performance, and they really took it to Glentoran. If they can keep that up, they are going to completely blitzkrieg a couple of teams, and to go to East Belfast and do that is a statement of intent that this team's all clicking together. It hasn't clicked together all the time, but they're playing so many forward players right now. Do you see them keeping it up over the season?
Well, I think it's obviously they brought David McDaid in the summertime, and Orrin reverted to two up front after last season going with a 4-3-3. And then on Friday night, he changed it again. And I don't know if it was just the lads or because they were used to playing that way. They just seemed to find their rhythm very, very quickly at the Oval. And I think you were saying there about the passing. I think since they had the 3G pitch, Warren has tweaked their style a bit. And he likes to get the ball down. He likes to use the pace and knock the ball away quickly. And I think they're one of the teams that have boys that are comfortable on the ball, like Dean Jarvis, even Darren Cole come in, Graham Kelly, Jamie Glacken, Conor McHenry, as you mentioned. They're all very, very competent on the ball. I think Josh Carson come in the midfield has added that wee bit of solidity in there as well. So they never lost faith in what they were doing on Friday night, because I think after falling a goal down, it's very easy for teams just to, you know, jack it in and go, oh, well, it hasn't worked, and we're goal down and roll over and die, basically. But they kept going in the second half, and they upped it. And even when Jamie Glacken went off with an injury, young Lee Harkin, or Lee McLaughlin, as he's known on the comment system, he came in, he hasn't really had much game time, but he provided that wee bit of magic for Shevlin, just find a bit of space, whipped a great ball in the box. And that's what you need. You need guys that are just going to provide that inspiration. And Oran rightly called Conor McHenry an enigma after the game, because I think there is times he gets frustrated by him. But when Conor opens up in front of goal, like, you know, he can score so many and create so much.
He is the type of player where you go, his photo was right beside the word mercurial in the football dictionary. Like, it is totally there. He is a game winner, or he's one of those quite frustrating players as a fan where he's just not lighting up the game as he does the times that he's just a game winner. Of course, any team that has Matthew Shevlin back in their squad is going to feel a lot better about themselves. He gets goals. That's what he does. And you're not completely up to full strength at the minute, but it's starting to feel like you're getting closer to it. And the one thing that I've definitely noticed over Corey in the season, it doesn't matter what the 1-11 is reading it on the graphic or on the NA Football app. Until you see it on the pitch, you have no clue what formation they are going to play. They are just so fluid. And it will be about trying to keep up that momentum and keep up that style of play. These players all, there's tweaks and there's changes. And perhaps they have just finally hit the right rhythm and the right way of playing for them. To go back to Glentoran, a lot of fans really frustrated. You never want to lose at home, particularly when you're still 1-0 up. They were hanging on, let's be fair, but hanging on 1-0 with just over 10 minutes to go. Warren Feeney is talking about all the injuries he's having to deal with, a lot of them across the back line. And these are big, influential players, the likes of Reece Marshall. They start with Josh Kelly's getting a run on the team at the minute. David Fisher started. When they're playing these young players, they have a big squad for a reason, but do you feel any sympathy for him where you're coming off a patch where from two games at home, you've only got 1 point to show for it?
I think, you know, people, when they listen to managers complain about injuries, and, you know, it doesn't matter how bad the injuries are, the fans will just sort of brush it off and say, like, every team will get injuries during the season. You just have to deal with it and go on. I think when you talk about it all the time, it can sometimes breed into the players and almost like as if it's a ready-made excuse, so we're struggling because we've got all those injuries. Like, they still really feel a really, really strong side on Friday night. They go 1-0 up at home. They're league leaders. I just expect a wee bit more of Glentoran on Friday night. I thought they might have wanted to put a show on after drawing the week before and, you know, being top of the league. But in the second half especially, I thought they just sat in and invited Corey and onto them. It wasn't until McHenry scored in the 82nd minute that they suddenly sort of sparked into life a wee bit and thought, oh, hang on a minute here, we have to go and get something out of the game. If Glentoran had come out and got the second goal, I think they go on and win the game. But they didn't do that. They didn't push. And I don't know if that was like a come from the players or the management. I don't know where that sort of setup came from, because to me, be on the front foot, especially at home, and I know a few fans when we were sitting up in the press box weren't happy that they waited until they were 2-1 down until they started to attack Corey in again.
But this is also, I'm speaking to a man here that probably remembers very well when Corey made a change, took three players off, and that was when everybody had up in arms. Why did you change it when you were 2-0 up or whatever against 10 men? So sometimes you just can't win. But Glentoran will do their best to deal with these players on the sideline. One team who looks to be using their squad very well and don't look fazed by their injuries at the minute is Lorn Lee Bonus. Who needs him when Andy Ryan's getting a double and Paul O'Neill is finding a purple patch? He's back in the team scoring goals, and Lorn are victorious in the East Coast collision down at Inver Park. Despite them scoring four goals, we'll give Carrick their shine. Danny Perkis, he only scores mega long goals, it seems. Is he just got a complete radar in his eyes that he sees there's these goalkeepers are just off the line ever so slightly? Or was he just confident after pinging one in his own half against Glenavon? I'll just do it again here.
I think it just sums up his confidence and ability. Like, when you look at the goalkeepers he's beaten against, like Rory Brown and Rowan Ferguson, two of the best in the league, and he's beaten them for, 40, 50 yards? Like, you know, it just sums up. I think that's just spurred him on to, you know, the big try these long range attempts, like, you know, and he's certainly paying dividends for him at the moment.
This Lorn side, I've talked about how it felt like they were very lucky with injuries last season. They don't have Roscoe out after impressing in a previous game. Lee Bonus seems to have an issue at the minute, but they're brick. That's why they have the likes of Sean Graham coming in. Scott Allen is able to jump into the team, and the players that they're bringing on as well, Joe Thompson, Daniel Curtins, Mark Randall's now back, Dylan Sloan, after playing so well for the past couple of weeks, he's not in the side at the minute. Michal Glynn, what a player to bring off the bench as well. I don't think they started the season like an absolute firecracker, but it looks as though they've found this cadence and rhythm, and they're starting to be that locomotive again, if we're going to go back to the train analogies. They look like they're just beating everything off the track as they plough forward. And they often get labelled as boring, but they're scoring plenty of goals at the minute.
Yeah, as you rightly say, it doesn't matter who seems to be injured or not selected. They have a 11 guys out in the pitch that can go and beat anybody. And they have just that confidence in themselves. Like, since the day and hour Andy Ryan step onto the pitch over here, I've been impressed with him. I think he's a fantastic footballer. And I think this season we're going to see even more goals from him. And Paul O'Neill is a guy who his ability has never been in doubt. He's maybe just consistency has what's dogged him a wee bit. But this run on the team is really benefiting him. He's gone on there. You can see the confidence in him. His first goal the other night was a cracker, you know, and he's unlucky not to add another one before Andy Ryan wraps up the rebound for his first goal. And his header was another cracking finish. So, like, it's not bad that you have a guy of his ability able to come in when you're without Lee Bonus, like, you know. And, like, obviously Lee was touted for big things. Everybody thought he would probably be leaving there in this season. But it just shows you how football can go, like, you know. And it's about taking your opportunity when you get in the team. And Paul O'Neill is certainly doing that at the moment.
Well, talk about taking your opportunity. Linfield go to the place that will be described all season as a tricky place. In Lakeview Park, Loch Awe, who are feeling themselves very much. Jack Scott gets the double to help Linfield win 2-0. But he wasn't a starter. He came on for Daniel Fillingson, who had an injury. And he gets a sweet little strike from the edge of the box to take the lead. And he's out and about to double his tally as well. It was an absolutely stellar performance for Linfield, but I thought Loch Awe really put themselves to them. They didn't let Linfield dominate. And, oh, Loch Awe had a couple of chances, particularly in the first half, to take the lead or to pull it back. Dean Smith will be hammering his team in the future that they need to take those chances when they come. I'm talking about Nathaniel Ferris, rounded the keeper at one point, and it was a tough angle, but a goal there could have set them up really well. I was waxing lyrical about them last week. I don't think there's any shame in losing 2-0 to Linfield at home. I think more than anything, the second goal, I'll say this, the second goal was a bit of a mistake from Turker, but I would say this team looks pretty much safe. They look home and hosed. More performances like this and they will be able to cruise the rest of the season.
Yeah, I listened to Dean's comments afterwards. I think It was a bit surreal for him because he was mentioned about 12 months ago. I think they were playing Newington at Lakeview Parkhorse, and Saturday there it was a full house nearly, and you're playing Linfield coming down there, and you're creating chances against them. Like you mentioned about the Ferris one, I think Benji McGee had an even better chance where he runs through the keeper and slots it past the post. Those fine margins, where on another day, if they go in front, it's just changes the game completely. But you're right, they say like they're close to putting down a real foundation for them to build on for the rest of the season, particularly when you look at the teams below them at the minute. Like it's beyond their wildest dreams because nearly every man and his dog was tipping not goal to go straight down whenever they got promoted, and that was so unfair on them because half the boys probably never even seen them play in the last 2 or 3 years, And Dean is a fantastic manager. He's created a real team spirit there, and there's good players there. You have to say that they're not there just by chance. They're there on merit, and I know what I've seen of them this season, they make it difficult for teams. And as you rightly say, it will be a tricky trip to Lakeview for anybody that goes there this season. And all power to them. They deserve to be there.
It was a feisty little battle on Friday night where Newry and Dungannon battled to try and create some sort of bottom six supremacy. In the end, it was Newry who gave Dungannon a little bit of a taste of their own medicine. It wasn't completely at the end, but a late goal from Adam Carroll in 86 is able to pull things back and they share the points. 2-2. Another big long ranger from O'Connor on this occasion for Newry. Then Ethan Devine, basically, hopefully now Swifts fans will hope that he has arrived in a Dungannon shirt, getting a brace of his own. A draw probably suits both teams, but they'll both believe and hope and will have wanted to take all three home from that game.
Yeah, probably, as you rightly say, like 3 points would have been the target out of them, but you take your point and you move on. It seemed to be a really good game, and obviously Kieran O'Connor trying to rival Danny Purkis for the Goal of the Month award. That was another fantastic strike, so it was. But Big Ethan, as you rightly say, has made the headlines for Linfield a couple of seasons ago when he broke onto the scene, and last season maybe didn't go how he would have wanted, but he shows his ability again with two fantastic headers. And I think he'll be a big asset for Dungannon this year. He's a young, fit lad who's got a physical presence, and he'll relish going to places and being thrown it up to players and getting the battles with the defenders. And when you've got the likes of the other Dungannon forwards feeding off him and for what he brings down, they'll be a real threat going forward.
I think their low key is a bit of pressure on him. And if he's looking to progress his career, he will have to handle it. He will have to put this team on his shoulders. They have a few other players. Ben Gallagher has been scoring a couple of goals for them. He came off the bench. Joe Murr, he's more of a winger come attacker. And we'll see where Thomas Maguire eventually plays. He's been playing out wide, but if Dungannon are to be comfortable this season, goals from him will be key. For Newry, they've been able to score plenty of goals. I've talked about it on this podcast. It's trying to keep them out at the other end is their issue. But despite them going down 2-1 after taking the lead, to come back and to rally shows that this team is ready and willing for the fight. They battled all last season. And so far, I don't think we've seen any instances of second season syndrome. They are battle ready and they've shown in big spots they can step up, and that should and could be an important point for them to build on between now and Christmas, no doubt. Myself and Stephen currently live in a world where we have no clue what happened in all the Tuesday night games. What a collection of fixtures there is. Very much looking forward to trying to peek my head at one of these. Reds against Cliftonville, Linfield take on Crusaders at Windsor, massive, and Loughall will look to get their first big scalp of the season. But nothing is harder than having Lorne come to town. So, couple of big games there. So we'll do our best to preview all the games this weekend. With unfortunately a bit of ignorance that you future people do not have. Let's start. First off, all games on a Saturday? That feels weird. That feels rare. We're going back in time. Hold on to these while they are still a reality. But let's just start with the game that actually happens at the end of the day. Half five kickoff. It's being streamed. It is going to be Steve McDonald's first game in charge of the Lurgan Blues. And we look at that, income Larn. Just no matter what the result is against Loughall, I think we'd both predict that Larn will come in there and get the points. They look like they're on a tear. And it would be hard to suggest otherwise in this game. Like, it would be some new manager bounce if it's anything but a Larn win at Moranview Park on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's very hard to see can happen getting anything out. I think the best they could hope for is like a nearly a backs against the wall sort of performance and hope that Larn maybe have an off day. But as we talked earlier, when you're missing one of your key players and your goalkeeper, Rory Brown, it's a massive miss for you. But who knows, some days you see this and a new manager comes in and is able to wave a magic wand and produce something. But as you say, it would be a huge shock if Larn didn't come away with all 3 points, given the form of both teams at this present time.
I will be fascinated. It's always interesting to see with the new manager. I know we've seen it ever so slightly over the past few weeks without Guy Hamilton in there, and we've seen some of the changes that the team has made. But it will be very intriguing to see how Steve McDonald looks at his team and how he sets them up, a bit like Corrin, but in a more negative and disappointing way. Glenavon have been chopping and changing and tinkering to try and make this team work. And striker is an area that they are missing bodies and proven quantities. But they do have potential, let's just say. I do like a bit of Nesbitt. He throws himself around and can do stuff. Prendergast is very young. He's wet behind the ears, but he has stature and he has a bit of pace and a bit of fight to him. So I'm interested to see how he fits all these players together. But for me, it's going to be probably a 2-0 victory for Larn, if not more.
Yeah, you mentioned Jackson Nesbitt there. I was impressed with him in the first half on Saturday against Crusaders. He was unlucky. One of the chances he had, that's the first time I've actually watched him this season. I thought he's a guy that could do a job, you know, for them. So as you say, you know, Stephen will get a look at his players this week and have to pick a squad and a team to go out and take on the champions. And, you know, he's probably the sort of guy that'll relish the challenge. You know, come the full-time whistle, it might be a different story, but you have to play everybody at some stage this season. And, you know, it gives everybody a chance to go out and impress on Saturday.
Linfield host Newry as we move to our 3 o'clock games. We all heard and saw Kit up in Coleraine, where Newry's home kit, the blue and white kit, obviously clashed with Coleraine. Coleraine had to fire out a gold one as the Newry strip of the slightly grey kit was closer to white than it was to a real dark grey colour. Newry have got a brand new kit and it is all pink, and I probably believe that they're going to get a first outing of it at Windsor Park. Hopefully it'll be a chance for them to create lovely new memories in this bright new pink kit. But I think if you go over the past few years, Newry have not had many good days in their outings at Windsor Park. And Linfield are scoring goals and they're getting wins, and I'm not betting against that today.
Yeah, again, it's hard to see anything other than an Linfield win, but you know, it hasn't been a happy hunting ground for Newry in recent seasons. But does Gary and does Newry think this is a bit of a free hit and you go and take the game to try and take the game to Linfield? We saw recently with Carrick Rangers did that with Linfield. They went and they pressed the Linfield 11 and they got their rewards for it. It'll be interesting to see how Gary approaches the day. You know, will he be defensive or will he go on the attack? But it's all very intriguing battles, because Linfield will want to follow up their victory over Loughall and try to maintain their position at the top of the league. So there's that wee bit of extra pressure on them to do that.
This next fixture just feels so intriguing if you try and picture what it's going to be like. Will the weather be good? We don't know, but Carrick Rangers will play host to Glentoran. Neither team feeling particularly jazzed about themselves at the minute, but we all know what Taylor's Avenue can be like. Is it going to be a windy, blustery day down at Carrick, because on that grass pitch, it could just be an all-out slog and battle. Glentoran simply need to win, and they'll take it any way that comes. Carrick, usually I would say, you know what, Carrick could sneak this here, but they just haven't shown to me that they have the defensive fortitude to resist the type of attacking talent that Glentoran have. Yes, they're away from home, but you've got to believe that between Donnelly and Junior, McGinn, I've got to believe that Glentoran will do it, but it would be some result for Carrick if they got anything from that.
Yeah, probably Stuart's biggest other point is probably the goals that they've conceded already this season. Because like when you look at the quality of defenders they have, and the goalkeeper, like they should be doing a lot better. But it's just that anomaly of the result against Crusaders is probably what's holding them back. But like they all fancy their chances against the Glens on Saturday, especially at home. And what price an or Danny Purgis spectacular strike? Like I'm sure he would love to get on the score sheet against his former employers, but it's probably not a game that Glentoran are going to fancy much. As you say, if the weather's not good, you're going there in a tricky pitch against a side that will give you a battle. So,
Oh, you just know that Carrick will choose to take any trick out of the book there at home. It's a smaller pitch there. I think Carrick will play up to it, and they will battle everything, and that could vary. They'll go out to frustrate Glentoran. They've got to.
Yeah, and Sturdy will want to get back on track again after losing on Friday night. So obviously his connections with Anfield, I'm sure he'd love nothing more than getting one over the Glens, but it's another intriguing battle, and I could probably see that one ending in a draw, but I wouldn't rule out a Carrick one, because I think they've just got that wee bit about them at home. They're very, very hard to beat and down there, and they'll be wanting to improve from last Friday night.
If that game is nil-nil with 20 minutes still on the clock, expect anything and everything. Last minute penalties, red cards, whatever. That could be a fascinating game come the end of play on Saturday. I have predicted this year that Loughall are going to go to Belfast, and they're going to take 3 points all the way home to Armagh. Is Saturday going to be the day when they go to Solitude? Probably not in the way that Cliftonville are playing, but stranger things have happened. Are Loughall going to be the hare in the soup of Cliftonville's little party right now?
It's probably come at a bad time for them. They go to Solitude, like as you rightly say, Cliftonville have just hit that wee bit of form. Obviously, we don't know how things will pan out on Tuesday night between them and Corian, so they could be getting into the game cock-a-hoop, or they could be getting a bit of a downer. But I think going to Solitude at the minute is a tough task for any team. So how Loughgall approach it, it'll be interesting to see. Will they try to stifle Cliftonville? But again, they're sitting there, Loughgall sitting there in great form at the minute. They just maybe not getting the results that the performances have deserved, but they'll have nothing to fear. They can go there and focus on themselves and see if they can bring something back to Armagh, as you rightly say.
I think this will be a tougher game for Cliftonville than many will expect, but I think when you have a striker quite like Ben Wilson at the minute, he will find chances to score goals. And for the sake of my fantasy team, I think he will. I think Cliftonville will get the victory there. Huge week for Jim Irvine. He takes his side away to Dungannon. They need points, but more importantly, they can't be giving them away. The teams like Dungannon. Dungannon are scoring goals. That's something that Ballymena aren't doing. If you're Jim, what do? You can't buy a goal. You can't buy a win from anywhere. Do you just have to keep altering or changing? Do you have to just trust the process that it's all going to click? It's one of those tough spots where do you stick or twist? And the pressure is off Dungannon Swifts ever so slightly, but they'll want to come out of this as a must win, because if they win this, they put not massive amount of daylight between them and Ballymena, but it would be a problem for another day if they were able to make that. Would it be 7 points the difference between the two of them? So some would probably say a draw here. I just think Dungannon, their big problem sometimes is scoring. They're doing that, and I think they'll score the goals, and Ballymena will not be able to reply with as many. I'm going to say 2-0.
Yeah, you just look at the table at the moment and you think, Ballymena, this is nearly a must-win game for them when you see the teams around them and who they're playing on Saturday. You know, like Glenavon, Larne, Newry, Gordie, Lumford, Carrick play Glentoran. If Ballymena were to pull a result out of the bag at Dungannon, pick up 3 points, suddenly it just gives them a wee bit of more belief that they're, you know, they can pull away from the bottom of the league. If they were to get beat, I just think it's a, you know, it's a disaster for them, and it just, you know, the cloud suddenly gets bigger over Warden Street. As you rightly say, Dungannon just have that ability to score goals at the minute. They just look as if they can pick up points. So you just fear that Ballymena just won't be able to answer that, you know, and then Ethan Devine, of a guy that scored a very good brace last Friday night, and he'll be relishing, I'm sure, coming up against the Ballymena defence on Saturday.
And finally, it's got to be the game of the weekend. Crusaders go up to Coleraine. When I look at this fixture and I see the way these two teams have been playing, what I'm hoping for is that this game is all gas, no breaks. What is the recent history of these two teams playing? Is it feisty? Is it end-to-end? Do you expect a cagey game on Saturday? Because if there's an early goal, I think that could just open everything up.
Well, if you look at the game now, you would probably say Corey and have a wee bit more of a belief in themselves rather than the Crusaders, who have come through that a wee bit of a sticky patch. But in the recent past, the home team seem to have come out on top in the clashes between these two sides. Corey have dominated at the Showgrounds, and Crusaders have dominated at Seaview. So you'd think it's maybe going to follow a similar pattern. I think it will be a high-paced affair. I think Corian will look to play the passing game, as you maybe not be too enamoured with, Peter, but I think they will try and play a bit more of their attacking style again. They will want to get the ball down. If they play as well as what they did at the Oval on Friday night, I think they could cause Crusaders problems, particularly if the Crews are still missing one or two key players.
I said it last week and before, Jimmy Callagher is a big loss for them. I don't know if they've fully found their shape without him, or they've been able to fill in that leadership and that role in that back line. And having all these Coleraine attackers dip in and out, weave between them, it will be, for me, probably the biggest test that Crusaders has faced, particularly away from home. It's just, will Coleraine have the defence, the strength at the back to deal with if Ben Kennedy's playing? I know Philip Laurie's had the odd bit of joy against Coleraine. Lecky up there can always get a goal from somewhere. So I think this will be a battle. Could it be a draw? Very, very easily if neither team are able to get the goals. But I do just think that confidence from Friday, that extra bit of rest, if you're going to call it that, from the Friday, and the fact that they're playing at home, Corian have to keep going at the same pace. And you know what? All this passing is fine. I had no problem with the passing. The problem is that I don't know if this passing works. And then everybody after the game, after the one, was like, you're an idiot. And I had to come out and go, it was 15 minutes into the game. I didn't say it was awful, but it worked and it can work. But I'll be following all these accounts. And when you're all complaining that, oh, all this passing but no goal scoring, I'll be like, well, you see, go both.
I told
ways.
You so. You're not
coming back. No more analysis for me. Clearly, it's just disaster. I'm going to back Coleraine because I do think home advantage will be key there. Another big week, another fun week. I will steal all your notes as I go into Niffl headquarters over the next few days to chat to Jared. But if people liked the cut of your jib, Mr. Crawford, where can they find further musings?
On the old school, so I'll continue to call it Twitter, on the at Stephen R. Crawford. I still haven't got used to this X malarkey yet, so on there.
And nobody ever will.
I think it just doesn't sound right. So yeah, on there, and on the Belfast Live social media pages, like, you know, so always up for a chat about the Irish League and I like a bit of banter, like, you know, so.
Absolutely. Stephen, thank you so much. I look forward to Benning Weir at Further Games. Go follow him on all those places. You've no doubt read plenty of his work pretty much on a weekly basis. And until then, see you soon. I did say I would come back to all these polls that I sent you each week. You can go check out the question that I asked you below this episode on Spotify. But I asked last week what would be considered Gary Hamilton's greatest success as Glenavon manager. Nobody thought it was his exploits in Europe. A few of you, just 5%, thought that it was his top three finishes. I thought that would be a bit higher. No relegation worries was also 5%. Player development, a wee nudge up higher at 14, but the clear runaway winner was his two Irish Cups. So clearly that is the big resounding memory. That is the legacy which Gary leaves. And now it's on to the new man to see what he can do there. But if you are on Spotify, it's a good chance for you to go and follow this podcast. Hundreds of you do, and it's a good week to do it, as you'll be able to get a notification as soon as I drop a brand new fresh episode. I've got an interview with Jared Lawler on the way, and the best way to find that is to stick around, get a follow, so you'll get a notification when it comes out to you. It also gives you a chance for any future episodes to get a wee ping and say, boom, it's up. Maybe you already subscribed and you got this as soon as possible. Another good way to follow this podcast is by following me on social media. It's Kicking Match on Facebook, Kicking Match on Twitter, Kicking Match on Instagram. And you can also play me via your smart speaker. It's at Kicking Match and Irish League Podcast there. It's all Saturday football this week, so go out and enjoy it. I hope the weather is good. Until next time, enjoy your football. Chat soon.